hatiku. Rembulan pun tahu saat kau di sini pelita menemani, dan bintang pun tahu semesta menari tatkala jatuh hati.
Jakarta recorded 1,459,542 tourist visits during the 2025 Eid holiday period, surpassing the project target of 1.1 million. The increase was attributed to the extended holiday duration and flexible work from anywhere policies, leading to early homecomings despite the surge in visitors. Hotel occupancy rates remains around 50% as many tourists opted for more affordable accommodations. Following the Eid al-Fitri holiday, 75% of the customers at Pegadaian's Galeria 24 outlets opted to purchase gold bullion, primarily in denomination ranging from 5 to 100 grams. This trend reflects a growing preference for gold as a safe haven investment amid global economic uncertainties. To meet this demand, Pegadaian offers various gold-based investment products, including installment plans, savings accounts, and gold deposits. And that was the news.
Izinkanlah ku kecupkanimu, hanya ada di dalam angan. Esok pagi kau buka jendela, kan kau dapati seikat tumbang merah. Kau tahu ku mulai bosan bercumbu dengan bayang-bayang. Bantulah aku terus. sejenak perjalananmu. Oh, oh, oh. Dan biarkan aku mengerti apa yang tersimpan di matamu. Sisa butiran cinta, dan semoga kerinduan ini bukan jadi mimpi di atas mimpi.
Going to culinary tour to Banyuwangi, East Java, you should come to Wit-Witan Market, the traditional market which becomes one of favorite places in Banyuwangi. Is located at Alas Malang Village, Singojuru Sub District, Banyuwangi. The market opens every Sunday morning, starting from 6 until 10 a.m. local time. Under the cherry tree, you can enjoy various traditional culinaries of Banyuwangi, such as Geseng Bangsong. Geseng Bangsong is a typical food of Wijenan Kidul Hamlet, Singolatren Village, Singojuru Sub-District. Geseng Bangsong is a special menu and rarely found, which is made from duck meat as its main ingredient and wadung yang leaf that adds a unique sour taste. Wadung tree is many found and growing wild at the village. Besides giving sour taste, wadung leaf is also used to remove fishy smell from duck meat. The duck must be the big one, so it is usually used male duck for cooking geseng bangsong. Besides udang yang leaf, this culinary is also cooked with other spices such as cayenne, onion, and garlic. The sambangsong has savory and spicy taste. Spicy taste mixed with sour taste certainly produce delicious food. In Banyuwangi, the food is usually served when Islamic events being conducted, such as the birth of Prophet Muhammad, Eid al-Fitr, and Eid Adha. But now, Gesang Bangsong can be found at Witwitan Market every Sunday. The price of the food is affordable, which is around 20,000 rupiah to 25,000 rupiah per portion. In addition to taste Gesang Bangsong, you can also enjoy other typical culinaries of Banyuwangi such as rawon alas, sego cawu, as well as traditional snack such as tiwul and gatot, which is made from cassava. Well, listener, that was our segment of Indonesian Wonder for today. I'm Purisa Fridella. Thank you for listening.
For listeners still tuning in Indonesia Today with your host Ray, and of course for listener right now, Indonesia is having good news coming from everywhere, just like this. Republik Indonesia's government to encourage imports of U.S. products, said Minister Hartarto. Coordinating Minister for Economic Affairs Erlangga Hartarto met with the U.S. Ambassador to Indonesia Kamala S. Lakhdir to discuss Indonesia's efforts to prepare fiscal and non-fiscal incentives amid the United States tariff policy. The incentives aims to encourage the imports of U.S. products and maintain the competitiveness of Indonesian export to the U.S. The reciprocal tariff of 32% imposed by the U.S. on Indonesia will come into effect on April 9, 2025, unless negotiated further. The minister said he will pursue several strategic policies as a negotiation measures in response to the U.S. tariffs.
Have you wondered why we were never meant for one another?
listener, that was Deepa Barrios featuring Nadine with All Good. And what comes good? Of course, the Indonesian film that always improving each year, and of course this year also. Right now we are going to have a special interview about the improvement of the Indonesian film in Indonesia. So stay tuned with us always in Voice of Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and via streaming on voanews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you: Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Voice listener, over the decades, the film industry has evolved, reflecting the nation's culture, struggle, and aspiration. And today we'll explore its journey, the challenges, and the triumphs of the future holds for Indonesian filmmaking. And right now, joining us is a special guest we'll talk about in VOI Talk about the Million Stories One Indonesia. With our special guest, we have here Riri Riza and Julita Pratiwi in today's special interview. How are you guys today?
Hello, thank you. I'm fine. It's a very sunny morning, so it's lovely.
Yes, and Julita, how are you today?
Hi, thank you for having us here today. And yeah, I'm really excited about the talk.
Yes, because from what I can heard, Riri Riza just came back from shooting today.
Yes.
Okay, about what movie? Of course, we'll ask about it later. But right now, the talk is about the Indonesian film industry. And my first question to both of you first, to start it off, what do you think about the film industry in Indonesia today? Maybe not just around the market, but also around the parliament as well. Is there any changes that you feel in Indonesian film industry right now?
You first or me first?
maybe Riri first.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me here. I think it's always exciting to every time we approach the National Film Day, which is celebrated every 30th of March, marking how as a nation we are value our history related to film. Indonesian filmmaker has produced so many good films that very much contextualize the history of Indonesia and reflected in the silver screen for the past 75 years. So if we talk about today, the condition, I think film is always can be seen as a reflection of the social reality of a nation. I think filmmakers always try, whether they realize it or not, always like in a way like an artist writing, thinking or responding to the social reality. And there are some films now, there are some efforts now, either in front of the screen or behind the screen, that has been done to keep the momentum rolling. But I think Indonesia as a nation today is, you know, facing, you know, so many challenges and difficulties, you know, like what happened to the music scene, the band, the punk band Sukatani, was which was forced to apologize because what they're saying through their music, for example, the threat to the freedom of expression and freedom of press is something that also you know, started to intrigue our stability and our you know, how we see our distant future in the film industry. I think the economic situation is also will challenging for us, will be challenging because you know, film is very much related. If you talk about industry, film is much related to the reality of economic situation. And now there are some changes happening, you know, in terms of when I talk to fellow producers, that the investment situation is started to change. They started to have doubt whether investing in film will be something that is still promising in the next few years. So I think that is the situation. But at least, you know, I'm very happy. Like you said, I just finished shooting, finished production of a film, which is going to be released sometime at the end of the year. So definitely I hope today, you know, millions of Indonesians still rely themselves on, you know, see themselves in the big screen, see their problem, you know, reflecting in some artistic interpretation by filmmakers, by us in the cinema, and expecting our film in the cinema this year and the future.
Okay. For Julita, what is your comment on that?
The things that are really happy every time we pass a march, it's a way for us to celebrating the National Film Month. And like Masgeri said, March 30 is the National Film Day. Is where everybody, not just filmmaker, but all the film stakeholder gather. So I kind of like want to see more into like a bigger picture, not just film industry, but the whole film ecosystem, where the scholar, the film critics, the film historian or film archivist, film programmer attempted to gather and talk about the discourse of Indonesian cinema each of the year. And it's a way for us to reflect the history, what has our past filmmaker ever made to develop and created a diversity toward Indonesian cinema. And I kind of found it like you asked about how is Indonesian film ecosystem today. I kind of see like there's a tendency to be more diverse and inclusive regarding the genre and the opportunity toward the new younger filmmakers. And as a person who came from like a young generation and not came from a filmmaking tradition, but more into like an archive and a scholar tradition, I quite admire the emergence of a new filmmaker lately. And like what Masgeri said, like they have an attention to reflect from the real life. So as a young generation, I kind of feel like the film is quite related with like our daily basis. And of course, like in other part, we should also be aware with the conditions of today's regime, like the government, how could the government can support film, not just industry, but as an ecosystem as a whole. And because I kind of feel like I always learn from Masgeri generation after post-reformation 1998, how Masgeri and everybody attempted to preserve the idea of freedom of expression, try to put up the importance of democracy, And I still remember like 2007, Masyarakat Film Indonesia, how they are forced to put up the case of Indonesian film censorship in the Supreme Court. And I kind of feel like as a young generation, and maybe it's also can be a task for the future generation in film ecosystem, how can we still preserve that spirit and never let down with anything that happens? So like, I think resistance is something that also need to be aware for today's and in the future.
Okay, such an amazing intake. And you, both of you said that the current trend in Indonesian movies is about the change of the regime in Indonesia, where we used to only have movies that played in the market or the public is about horror and religious. But now, both of you said that it is more relatable. Just like now, we have more movies about Batak ethnicity and many ethnicity in general. Movies like the ethnicities of Jawa, Jogja, and others like that to be more relatable to the media or the market of the Indonesian cinema. And what do you think about that, the upbringing of the ethnicity in Indonesian movies?
Yes. Maybe if I can comment on that, I think it's very important to realize that Indonesia has this strength in diversity, and I think since the early days, you know, sort of our founding fathers of Indonesian filmmakers. Has started to tell stories from different regions of Indonesia. We had a film, for example, like Harimau Champa, which was based in West Sumatra. Not only the location, but talk about the tradition of silat, for example. And in the 70s, we have films like Rodomendut, and also all the way until the 90s, you know. And nowadays, I think the potential of the regionalism, you know, how filmmakers is now came from different background with different tradition of cinema because of their interaction, their education, their way of you know, communicating themselves with their own lingo. I think it has become something very that growing significantly for the last, you know, maybe 5-10 years. We have filmmakers from Makassar who won award in Berlin, for example, with their stories. You know, we have many documentary filmmakers that made a film about their communities in Kalimantan, how they face the environmental challenges there, and their film become very, very subjective and very personal, and yet bringing a very global and universal issues at the same time, because they live in the area. Filmmakers is actually live and shoot in real time, you know, expressing what their restlessness about the changes or the threat that they're facing. So I think it's very important development, and I think it started to grow in many levels, you know, in the area of, you know, for example, short films, documentary, but also in commercial film that's shown in the cinema, national release. So that is something that for me is very encouraging, and it shows that filmmakers take control of what they want to say. You know, of course, I think we need to also grow the tradition of film critiques, film discussion in the communities, so filmmakers can also reflect and think further about what they're doing with the presence of film critics, you know, and academics in different area, in this different region too. that's my thought on that.
Okay, you said like the critics of the Indonesian film, and what I can say is Indonesian people really love to critic film, and they have really a deep understanding of films that they make. Because from a point of view of researcher, I would like to ask Julita about the, as a film researcher, what do you think about the Indonesian citizens of critiquing films and maybe thoughts of Indonesian cinema?
I kind of feel like the culture of critics is quite important. It's a way to build up a film literacy amongst the public. And I kind of feel like it's also connected with the spirit of post-1998 reformation and the availability of the media, where people can put their opinions. Like back then, people put it on the magazine or the newspaper, but now on people can make their own video and make a critics using their YouTube channels. And there's a lot of platforms like a Blogspot, a WordPress, and etc. And I kind of feel like it's a way to build up an active participatory toward the public. So like the awareness of film elements and the logic about the films and how is the reflections or the evaluation after watching a film is came from the public voices instead of just concentrate on the elite or the expertise. And instead of like seeing like a film critics as an exclusive sector, I kind of feel like this film literacy amongst the public is a way to build like the inclusivity about the critics as like a culture. And I think it's not just about the film, but like people started to talk about any other art, like music, like let's say like a installation, or like let's say like a series. And I quite embrace that sort of spirit.
Okay, so speaking of the Indonesian movie and filmmaking, I'd like to ask both of you, Riri as a film producer and Julita as a film researcher, Indonesia makes Indonesian movie makers, filmmakers make really good movies. And I would like to ask, in festival films, is really the part where filmmakers can express their thoughts and make their imagination comes to reality and make it into the film. And which part of the world where Indonesia's filmmakers or maybe festival film type of movies is really popular? In what country?
Okay, I think film festivals definitely is part of the, you know, ecosystem to promote the progress of cinema in general. Film festival is a very important avenue to promote the contemporary state of you know, the filmmaking condition or the you know, like the how a country is actually develop their own identity of cinema. Our Indonesian cinemas lately has a very significant progress positioning themselves in the international film festival, because for example, nowadays we have some short film directors, short filmmakers that, you know, make you know, not only selected but won awards in some major film festival like in Cannes, Venice, you know, in Italy, or in Berlin. You know, more and more producers attending film markets, which is not only in the film festival, you don't only show film, but you also started to talk about the potential of your, you know, future project. And they have, you know, they have like platforms to for filmmakers from all over the world to come to promote their concept, their proposal, and get it, you know, possible to have like a collaborators, co-production with, you know, different countries from all over the world in the film festival. So what I'm saying is for the last, I think, 10, 15 years, filmmakers from Indonesia, producers, directors, writers, has, you know, more and more engaged with the global community through film festivals, not only showing their film, but also compete in some of the very important competition. So if you ask me in which country our film is popular, I think in many important Asian film festivals, like in Busan, Korea, or in Tokyo, Japan, and also in Rotterdam, in Netherlands, and of course our film now getting more and more noticeable in the major festival like Cannes, because you know Molly Surya success in 2017 with Marlena, the murder in Act is was a you know getting strong attention there. Filmmakers like Camila Andini, Yosef Angginun, you know, they always have their presence every time they have Edwin, you know, every time they have their new film, they always like invited in this major film festival. So, yeah, the thing that we need to pay attention with is like Juju just mentioned before about the role of government. I mean, Indonesia should see this as a potential to actually promote our development as a country, because cinema is definitely like a window to see how a country is developed in, you know, in culture, in politics, in social, you know, how the quality of films is actually one thing that you then can be like a reflecting, you know, the reality of a nation, like we always believe. And so government, I think, should you know understand this further. The government should work together with more, you know, with prominent producer, Indonesian producer, to discuss how to position ourselves effectively in this map, you know, because I think sometimes they see it as what, like only one side of just the presence, you know, but not like a, you know, like an elaborate strategy that can run for like a long time, you know.
True. The government, from what I can heard, is you would like the government to support the filmmakers and improve the Indonesian film industry so that Indonesia can be more publicly acknowledged by other countries, right?
Yeah, but you know, with like a good strategy and good actually talking to the right people, because I think sometimes in Indonesia we spend money on it, you know, but it's not really like an elaborate strategy, you know, and we need to make sure that actually we know what we have, we understand the strength and the power of the films and quality that we have, and then, you know, they have to work together to actually choose the right platform for it, you know, to publicize it.
I see. And for Julita, what is your take on that?
I mostly agree with what Mas Yuri just said, and also the important things is don't let the opportunity of this showcasing of film just like the government see it as like a fragmented awarded, but without knowing what actually the meaning of all this present and award that Indonesian filmmaker has received, or the international acclaim or recognition that our filmmaker received. But like what's next, that is also the thing that quite important because besides like coming to the film festival, I think the things that we need to pay attention is also about the discourse. Because maybe Mas Rie is the one who knows more about this, like lately, like Busan Film Festival offered this idea of Indonesian Renaissance. Like, how do we respond on the idea of this Indonesian Renaissance that's being offered by one of like a quite major Asian film festival recently? The thing about when we talk about this course, it's not just about the filmmakers, but also it needs to involve like film historian, scholar, to actually like talk about how do we want to narrate our Indonesian cinema and bringing to abroad. Because somehow I kind of feel like everybody just working by themselves without certain like. Like gather and like discussing certain principal issues. And the other thing that need to be highlighted, the spirit to bringing back the films that has been lost. Like lately I heard the news about Turang, 1957 film by Bahtiar Siagian, just founded in Moscow Film Archive. And the film has been digitized and being presented by Bunga Siagian in Rotterdam. And I realized that Indonesian film has been traveled to so many regions across the world, but we never seriously pay attention about this networking that has been quite long. And like we didn't have any elements of that films in Indonesia. It's also the things that the government need to reflect about the support and the facility of the archive. And we could found it like in the archive abroad, and it's also like a way for all the film stakeholders to reflect about the conditions of because I kind of feel like archive and preservation is not just about physical but also like the idea and the narration in a long term. Hope okay. That makes sense.
I agree with that because movies should be put on, you know, like the Hall of Fame from Indonesia. That's why like old movies should be digitalized. From what I can heard, you started to digitalize old movies like from the Ratna's Asmara, first female film director in Indonesia, that should be digitalized and maybe spread out throughout Indonesia's communities so that people can understand more about the history and appreciate more about film industries in Indonesia, especially like the works of other filmmakers that went abroad, of course, just like Mr. Riza's work with Atira in 2016 that just went to the festival films, that it should be digitalized. From an archiver point of view, is that really important to archive movies in Indonesia and then spread out throughout the communities to get more attention?
Yeah, the spirit of digitization and restoration perhaps just started in, let me think, it's like around 2011 and 2012. The first collaborative project of restoration was for Usmar Ismail film, Lewat Jam Malam. It's a collaboration of Yayasan Confident, Cinematic Indonesia, and National Archive of Singapore, and also World Cinema Foundation. And since that, like the superior to digitize and also restore Indonesian classical film. Has begun. Also, it's not like in a fast phase that is quite slow due to the limitation of human resource and also technological resource that we have. But I kind of see like there's also this spirit of activism and collectivism toward the process of reviving the old films. Because like we can see that cinema is also like the way how we see our past memory, and by seeing an old classical film is the way for us to see like how was our cinema back then, like the aesthetic that been explored by Usmar Ismail, Katna Asmara, Bahtiar Siagian, and so on, and what can like today's filmmaker can learn from the things that they ever explored back then in the past. And for my experience with my collective in Class DRCIP, I kind of feel that this kind of initiative cannot be done by one person, oneself, like only one film historian or one film researcher. It's truly a collaborative project that involves film archivists, film programmer, and because the thing that we also critics is somehow like the film that being restored or digitized aren't easily being accessed by the public. Like once it's digitized and it's just being informed and that's it. And the challenge is how can the public see it and get access toward all these restored or digitized films. And besides doing this digitization and research project, we also attempted to give like a public literacy by establishing like after a watch discussions or like a public lecture. Yeah.
I see. Okay. That is such an amazing insight from you. And of course, thank you so much, Ms. Riri and Kak Julita, for coming to this special interview right now. And before I close, I would like to ask Ms. Riri, is it okay, about the film that you are currently producing right now? Is it okay to tell me a little bit about it? And maybe I would like to ask, since the movie is the Rangga and Cinta, yeah, as you guys can know, since in the modern era, Rangga is ghosting Cinta from the old movies. Is there any like modern aspect in like Gen Z ghosting through like the phone, not just leaving it alone?
Thank you. Yes, I think Rangga and Cinta is a very exciting project for us. It was based on our own film that we did back in 2002. I think it's almost like what we discussed about with Juju before, that actually film can be very, very interesting way to see ourselves and see our history, reflect on our history. In 2002, you know, what happened was, you know, we just went through the reform, political changes in Indonesia in 1998, and that is somehow reflected in the film Ada Barengan Cinta. So Rangga dan Cinta is basically a remake of that film, still in the same era, Ray. So you won't see, you know, the Gen Z today, but think about it, it's actually, it's an opportunity for the Gen Z today to actually see how Gen Z lived back in the early 2000s with the reality that they went through those days, not that much access to social media, not much distraction. They can be, you know, like a true friends that actually talk to each other, you know, gossiping about boys or boys gossiping about girls, or, you know, social competition with true, you know, face-to-face reality. So I think it's very, very, can be very interesting to see how the new generation react to the film. Through our our early release, when we announced our cast, we got very, very exciting response from the Gen Z through their social media of how they see this generation, you know, being told today. And I think the approach of the film will be, you know, somehow the musical nuance will be more highlighted. So and musical has been very, like a genre that's been very popular today, and not just today. You know, we Usmar Ismail, you know, the father of national cinema, has done a musical back in the 1954-55 with Tiga Dara or Asrama Dara. So yeah, I think you know, coming back from it, you know, I'm still having like a sort of like a creative jet lag. You know, I think it's very exciting to show this film to Indonesian audience in the not very long future, you know, hopefully before the end of the year.
So okay, I hope the best for your work right now. And thank you so much, Riri and Julieta, for coming to this special interview in VOI Talk. And of course, VOI listener, as we celebrated the 75 years of Indonesian cinema, it is clear that film is more than just an entertainment, but a reflection of our stories, heritage, and also the evolving society. Thank you so much for accompanying me in this special interview. I'm Ray, and
RRA Digital with New Look, various collaborative content from various national programs, including live visual broadcasts, live radio broadcasts, music playlists, podcasts, video news, and various users' interaction features in the game. Various interesting content such as likes, comments, and shares, as well as live chat with broadcasters and users. Direct messaging and private chat facilities between app users are also available. RRI Digital, available on Google Store and App Store. RRI Digital.
Kasolami is a unique and typical food from Southeast Sulawesi, specifically in Buton, Muna, and Wakatobi areas. Kasolami is generally shaped like a tumpeng or cone and is yellowish white. Cassava, which is widely grown in the Sulawesi archipelago, is the main ingredient of kasolami. Firstly, the cassava is washed, peeled, and shredded or milled using a machine. Then the grated cassava is put in a sack or cloth to be compacted. This compaction is to remove water content by being crushed or pressed using a tool made of wood or large stones. Then leave it for 1 to 3 hours until the water is completely dry. The solid is pure white. Next, the solid is wrapped in teak or banana leaves and tied. The solid is called KGP. To make kasolami, initially KGP is kneaded by hand until it looks like flour. Then the ingredients are put into a very unique steaming cone. This tool is made from woven coconut leaves. To steam the KGP, they use a pot made of clay similar to a jar. The cone filled with KGP flour is put into the mouth of the pot. Then it is cooked with medium heat and medium volume of water in a pot for about 15 minutes. One kasolami is generally made with a diameter of 10 cm and a height of 10 cm and weighs approximately 500 to 700 grams. Usually, a person can spend 1 to 2 kasolamis. Kasolami is sometimes served as a substitute for rice because it is often served along with vegetables and side dishes of various processed fish, such as grilled fish, fried fish, and salted fish. Kasolami is the initial food in Buton's traditional events. Interestingly, kasolami is also often used as stocks for trips or souvenirs between fellow Buton residents. Kasolami can be eaten without side dishes, accompanied by a cup of hot tea in the afternoon. The distinctive taste of cassava and the sweet blend of tea will add to this culinary delight.
I am the base, low is the face. Come from the ground, fill up the space. Yeah, I am the base, embrace the pace. No need a crown, 'cause I am the base. You and I are so alike. We move and we groove, we are silent proof. You and I will feel alive. Yes, strike to the bone when we hit the tone. Like this. Yeah, I am the bass. Low is the face. Goes from the down. Drive like an ace. Yeah, I am the bass.
I am the bass.
God give me grace. Can you feel the sound? I am the bass. You and I will feel alive. Yes, right to the bone when we hit the tone. Yeah, I am the bass. Low is the face. Come from the ground. Fill up the space. Yeah, I am the bass. God, give me grace. Can you feel the sound?